Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Question: who protects our protectors, healthcare workers, under siege in America? And today on the show, it's the Office of Professional Employees and the General President of the Heat and Frost Insulators. Welcome to the Friday, December 31st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We have a newcomer coming to us from Roseville, Minnesota. Name is Kelsey Anderson, and she is Vice President of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, OPEIU 12, Local 12. That's OPEIU12.org. She's going to run down a little bit of what her organization is all about. They obviously represent professional employees, and I believe Local 12 has about 2,500 members. Nationally, the Office of Professional Employees was chartered back in 1945, and they have just over 100,000 members, 103,000 members in the United States, Canada, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia. And she's a happy camper, because Health Partners, and she'll talk more about this, just negotiated their contract without needing to strike. It came very, very close to having a strike, and she owes this to the fact that they lined up with the service employees. They did a little collective action, made sure that they laid the proper groundwork, and now they have a good contract. Nonprofits, this is a tough area to organize in, and she's going to address that as well, although they've been having some success. So we'll get in all of that with our first guest, Kelsey Anderson. And speaking of the Office of Professional Employees, I just want to do a shout out here. Members of Move Texas United, which is an affiliate of Office of Professional Employees Local 277, unanimously ratified their first contract last week, having secured significant gains at the bargaining table. Highlights of the new contract include full benefits paid for by the employer, 40% employee representation on the board, that's pretty good, and a $50,000 wage floor for full-time employees, and, I like this one, a 32-hour work week, which is very popular in Europe. Also, tech workers at Big Cartel receive voluntary recognition of their new union, Big Cartel Workers Union, in a groundbreaking organizing victory. Staff at the e-commerce platform for creative businesses are the first tech workers to form a union in a right-to-work state. We're talking about Utah. They're based in Salt Lake City, and these union members are affiliated with the Office of Professional Employees, Tech Workers Union Local 1010, and they will begin bargaining their first contract with their employer in January. So this union's on the move, the Office of Professional Employees. Greg Rivard will be rejoining us. He was on the show, I believe, back in November, right on our Veterans Day show, and he is a veteran. Greg is General President of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers, also a proud sponsor of the show. And this is a union with a very, very rich history going back to 1903. That's when they were first chartered. And Greg is the 10th president of the Heat and Frost Insulators. And I have to salute them because you hear so much about going green. You got to use green materials, recycling, and the Heat and Frost Insulators. Insulators.org is their website. They have this posted right on the website that they've been trending green for more than 100 years. When you think about it, it's insulation. That is green. It saves money, improves lives, protects the environment. And check this out. The National Insulation Association, which is a trade group, they represent the mechanical and specialty insulation industry, and they've been doing that since 1953. They estimate that maintenance and insulation at industrial facilities alone can generate more than $3.6 billion in energy savings per year and reduce 83 billion pounds of carbon dioxide. That's monumental. You know, Pete Almini, on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT, has talked so much about energy conservation. So we'll touch on that briefly, but Greg is going to talk about the outlook for 2022 with this infrastructure bill, and he also wants to get into the fact that the Heat and Frost Insulators have done an incredible job helping out their brothers and sisters that fall victims to tragedies, to crazy storms like what happened in Kentucky a few weeks ago. And this started, my gosh, 15, 16 years ago. They put together a disaster relief fund, and they fund it with their members' money. They take a little snippet out on each paycheck, and they have built a sizable fund here. I understand. I believe it's over $3 million. Greg's going to give us some details on that. But it's been growing, and they've helped victims of Katrina, Hurricane Sandy. I just mentioned the deadly tornadoes in Kentucky, Hurricane Ida, which was just this past September, the floods in Tennessee. I mean, it's great. It's just another example, and there's so many examples of what unions do to not just benefit their own members, but the entire community that they work in. It's just phenomenal. And Greg obviously is very, very proud of that, and we need to talk about it on the show, and we will do that on the show, and we'll do that. Other unions do so much. We just had Bill Londrigan from the Kentucky AFL-CIO talking about what they were doing to clean up down there, and there was a number of the Teamsters, the United Association, Laborers International, all involved in that that effort down there. So Greg Rivard, on behalf of the Insulators Union, will be buttoning up the show today. You know, the healthcare workers are under siege in America. And I mean, we're talking about a population here that got into this field because obviously they want to help people. And they're being attacked, and talked about that on the show the other day. And they're just burned out. I have to thank the Harvard Business and Law School for putting together this article about protecting our protectors. Who's protecting our protectors? These people are working day and night trying to help people through this pandemic. And the article reads as follows: the devastating impact of the pandemic has had a heavy toll on the healthcare workers in America, from having to deny patients a bed due to shortage of resources, being abused and harassed for advocating vaccines, being unable to talk to and reassure patients due to having care for twice the number of patients they normally care for, to helping critically ill patients say final goodbyes to their families over the phone. I mean, it's so darn stressful. Turns out, according to the latest survey, 18% of surveyed healthcare professionals have left their jobs, citing exhaustion, financial reasons, and most of all, the pandemic, with labor shortages impacting the workplaces of 79% of medical workers, almost 80%. Due to the stressful and unpredictable nature of and ethical issues associated with healthcare, medical professionals were already at an increased risk of mental health issues, with estimates suggesting that anywhere between 16 and 22% of University of Colorado Hospital nurses experience anxiety, depression, or post-traumatic stress disorder. 55% of U.S. physicians surveyed by the Mayo Clinic experience burnout, despite their inherently higher resilience. Women, African-American, and Latino workers, along with allied health professionals like social workers, experience even more stress. The reasons for high attrition are the systemic undervaluation of labor and understaffing in medical institutions. While pay varies drastically across different sectors of the healthcare industry, some workers, such as nursing home staff, are not even making a living wage, with certified nursing assistants earning a medium pay of $14.82 an hour. Now, that's from last year, 2020, and it has not gone up much since, with the lowest 10% earning $10.70 per hour, what one nursing home aide describes as competing literally with McDonald's for wages. Is that crazy? These are people protecting us. A single nursing home aide may be responsible for 16, maybe 18 patients on her own, given that understaffing was already a chronic issue pre-pandemic. Long hours, such as multiple days of consecutive 12-hour shifts or single shifts lasting 28 hours four times a month, are not uncommon. Even where workers have rest or meal breaks, time constraints and the urgency of an upcoming ICU case might compel some of them to work through their break without it being considered as compensable working time. As one registered nurse remarked, "If it's a busy night, I don't get my breaks at all. I don't eat or drink maybe 10 hours at a time." Great article. Hats off to the folks at Harvard University for putting this together. The question is, who is protecting our protectors in America? We're at a crisis stage. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with the Office of Professional Employees, Local 12, back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation. Let's go to our live line and join a newcomer to the show. Her name is Kelsey Anderson, and she comes to us from the Office of the Professional Employees International Union, specifically Local 12, which I see is located in Roseville, Minnesota. Kelsey Anderson, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you.
And it's a pleasure to have the Office of Professional Employees join us. A lot of people are not familiar with this union. We do a lot with the trades. We have the communication workers. We have the American Federation of Government Employees, the steel workers. Talk to me about the Office of Professional Employees, and you can hone it in to what you do and how you got involved in Minnesota. Go ahead.
So office professionals, we represent mostly people in clerical positions. For instance, I work for Health Partners. I'm an administrative secretary at Health Partners, which is a healthcare facility here in Minnesota. We also represent other people who work at unions. We represent paras. We just recently won an election for Augsburg College staff as well. So it's mostly just clerical workers that we represent. We are not like the trades whatsoever. It's just office workers mostly.
I gotcha. Okay. And is this correct here? 2,500 members in the local? Is that up to speed?
Yeah, I think that's about an accurate number, give or take.
And your territory, are you just in Minnesota? How wide is your reach over there?
It's mostly Minnesota, but we do represent some people out of Kansas City, I believe, at Wilson McShane. But it's mostly Minnesota people that we're representing at Local 12.
And Kelsey, how did you get involved? And I understand you're currently serving as a vice president for Local 12. How did you get to that position?
Well, it was actually a really funny story. About 4 years ago, I was relatively new to Health Partners, and a vote came up for a contract, and I'm a second generation union member, and I believe strongly in voting and making sure that your voice is heard. So I made sure to go to that vote to hear about the contract and vote yes or no on the contract. And while I was there, I was talking to some other stewards and union reps and was talking to them about my experience working at Health Partners and stuff. And they convinced me to become a steward. And obviously I took them up on that, and I became a steward. And immediately, the more steward work that I did, the more I saw how much our members needed help in both their work life and personal life too. There were a couple instances where I was helping people where their personal life was getting in the way of their work life, and I was able to help them with some state laws that were in place and some contract language, and I was able to get there, and it was a really good feeling. And then eventually some of my colleagues convinced me to run for vice president. And so I ran for vice president when the election came around, and I won. And so here I am. I'm vice president of the local, and I really enjoy doing union work. It definitely gives me purpose, that's for sure.
I would imagine that your dad is kind of proud of you. I saw on your bio on your website, I should mention this too, it's OPEIU12.org. They're also on Facebook and Twitter, OPEIU12.org. So your dad was a Teamster. I see at Local 120 in the same area. So obviously that had some effect on you as far as getting involved in the union. Talk to me about that part.
Yes. No, my dad is, he's actually kind of a quiet guy. He's not the kind of guy that gets out there and gets loud. So he's the exact opposite of me. And so he's not the kind of guy that would go out and, make a big fuss about things. But he did believe in voting for his contract. And one of the things that I have a huge amount of respect for him was he was getting ready to retire from his position with the Teamsters, and they had a contract vote coming up, and he was on the phone with his coworkers, and he said, okay, well, you know what? I'm not the one who has to live with this contract. You are. So you just let me know how you want me to vote, and I will. And I had a huge amount of respect for my dad in doing that, because he understood what solidarity was. And granted, he probably wasn't the type of guy to hold a picket sign because he's quiet and timid, but he understood solidarity, and he understood the importance of going out and voting and making sure that your voice is heard and being there for your coworkers. And I paid attention to that, and here I am, and I took what he was doing and showing me, and I took it a step further, and here I am doing the work on a different level.
Chelsea, I'm kind of chuckling here in the background, because when you said your dad was kind of quiet, I didn't know there were any quiet Teamsters. I just and they sponsor this show. They're usually not that quiet, but your dad is a rare breed. You know that.
Right, yeah. When we're at family dinners and arguing about politics, he is definitely not quiet. But when it comes to getting out there in the public, he is. Maybe I should probably correct that.
Okay, there's two sides. There's two sides. I like that. Okay, you you mentioned this Health Partners. Let's get acquainted with Health Partners here. And I understand there's a new contract that's just been negotiated, and there was a possibility of a strike. Can you fill me in on that?
Oh, yeah. So I should probably start from the very beginning. So back before COVID hit, SEIU Healthcare, they're our sister union at Health Partners. They're the people that represent our, like, pharmacy techs and nurses and stuff. They had their contract was up, and it got vicious. Health Partners was not willing to agree to very much. They're trying to up their cost of health care, give them minimal raises. It was bad, and they actually got to the point where they actually voted for a 10-day strike. And right at the last possible minute, they finally came to an agreement. And part of that has to do with, you know, SEIU Healthcare was incredibly organized and with their people, but they also had the solidarity of OPIU members as well. In healthcare, it's easy to find scabs for nurses, right? Because with a nursing position, it doesn't really change too much from facility to facility, right? Uh-huh. Well, with an administrative position, it does. You need to be trained in extensively to understand our systems. So you can't find a scab. And so when they realized that they weren't able to get any replacements, not just for the healthcare workers, the nurses and the pharmacy techs and everybody, but they couldn't also get replacements for the administrative people. So they finally had to back down, because we had a clause in our contract that allows us to honor a picket line. So mm-hmm. if SEIU was picketing outside of our building, we did not have to cross that line, and we did not, we won't incur any kind of punishment. So going forward, with COVID, we extended our contract out one more year. So we ended up not negotiating during COVID. We did not want to run that risk of possibly losing any kind of health care, stuff like that, during the pandemic. So we wanted to keep everything the same, and then we just negotiated. And when we negotiated this time around, we were able to avoid a strike, and we were able to avoid anything too dramatic. We ended up going past the amount of time allocated for the contract. So we went past the time that it was actually expired, but we were able to extend it just enough to keep negotiating. And once we had two 25-hour sessions, in addition to weeks of sessions previously, and we finally came to an agreement, and we won our members a 5% raise in the first year, and a 2.5% raise the second, 2.5% raise the third, as well as keeping our health care pretty much mostly the same. We did have to concede on a couple raises, but they're minor in cost. And we were able to win some language as well with that new contract. So from what I'm hearing, we just ratified that contract. And from what I'm hearing from several members, they're very happy with it. And so Good. We're going to go ahead and take that as a win and thank SEIU Healthcare for helping us lay that groundwork as well during their contract as well.
Well, it's certainly good to have another union helping you out on that. And the fact that you got it ratified the first time, I'm sure you've been watching what's been going on in America. Kellogg's, mm-hmm. John Deere. I mean, they didn't do it the first time. The worker said, this just isn't enough. But obviously, you did your homework. You got it together, and you got a decent three-year contract out of it. You know, the healthcare situation in America is really interesting right now. I just came across a story about the healthcare conundrum. Who protects the protectors? And there's a lot of people in healthcare in general. And Kelsey, you know this, they're burned out. They're burned out. This pandemic right. has really, really taken the life out of them. And when you mention the scabs or replacement workers, we call them scabs. And I bring up the Kellogg's situation. I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, Kellogg's was going to hire replacement workers or scabs. And what the people did, the strikers, they went out when they offered the positions online, they filled out a bunch of fake applications and they flooded the portal to the point where they couldn't figure out what was real and what was not real. But with that being said, you know, you can't screw with workers today. There's a lot of people who are saying, you know what? I'm going to quit this job. I'm going to move on. You better give me some good benefits. So I think your timing on that was pretty good, getting that contract mm-hmm. together, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I did hear about that Kellogg thing where they were applying for the scab positions, and I thought that was absolutely fantastic. I have a special respect for that kind of petty. And I just want to just put a big solidarity fist in the air for those Kellogg workers to making sure that they are demanding the respect that they deserve. And so good for them.
You know, when times get tough, you got to get creative. You got to come up with something new. And they right. obviously did that one. And, boy, they got results. They settled it when they came back with another deal. All right, Kelsey, you can stay with us for another segment here on America's Workforce. Can we do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kelsey Anderson is her name, and she is the Vice President of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, Local 12, out of Minnesota. Roseville, Minnesota is exactly the city that she's calling us from. Later in the show, Greg Rivard will be joining us on behalf of the Insulators Union. He, by the way, is the national president. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings. All right, let's go back to our live line, rejoin Kelsey Anderson. Kelsey is coming to us from the Office of Professional Employees, Local 12. OPEIU12.org is their website. As I mentioned before, you could check them out on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. They have about 2,500 members in the Minnesota area. Kelsey, I want to talk about organizing nonprofits. And I know this is a difficult field. Talk to me about what you have been able to accomplish. And I'm sure you have some goals for next year, which is tomorrow, I should say. I mean, this being the last day of 2021, good riddance to 2021. Can't leave it quick enough. But anyway, talk to me about what you're able to accomplish so far in this nonprofit sector.
Our members are going to have to forgive me. I remember we just were able to organize the Jewish Action community nonprofit organization, as well as Minnesota Voice. And I know that there was another one, and I'm blanking on this, but we did win a couple nonprofits here in Minnesota. And these nonprofits do things where with like political activism and things like that. And it is very difficult to organize nonprofits because the people who work for nonprofits are usually self-sacrificial. That's my intake on that, because they feel like they want the money to go to the cause, right? Not to themselves.
Right. And so
it's easy for, you know, nonprofit organizations to take advantage of their workers because these workers are so generous with their time and because they believe in the cause that they're working for. And, but we were able to get a couple of them. We also were working on another one where it's called Headway United, but unfortunately we did not win that election. And Headway was a wonderful organization of people who work in the mental health field. And these are people with master's degrees, and they are making less than I do as an entry-level clerical worker. So they deserve more from that company, and it was unfortunate that we didn't win that election, but we're working hard on finding more. And it's just... It's just something that we need to keep working on, and we need to keep reminding people that you can't take care of other people until you take care of yourself first. And the best analogy that I can think of is when you're on an airplane and the airplane's going down, they're not telling you to put the mask on somebody else. You got to put it on yourself first before you help another person. And that goes with union work and with nonprofit work. You need to make sure that you're being taken care of, that you're getting the health care that you need, the wages that you need, and everything like that before you can jump into helping other people. Because if you're not able to take care of yourself, how can you take care of other people? How can you help these other people? And union work can really give workers the ability to help other people, and these nonprofit workers to help other people when they're doing that. So they need to remember that before they can help anybody else, they need to help themselves, and unions will give them the tools to do so.
Kelsey, I have a question for you when it comes to organizing and the anti-union tactics that are used in the corporate world. And you know about this. I mean, just to throw out a couple of examples, Amazon, what they did down in Alabama, which is warranting a new election because they overstepped themselves on that. They'll hire, I mean, multi-million dollar law firms to try to convince you not to go union. I mean, we've seen that, the intimidation, the threats. Sometimes, I mean, it gets violent. Does that happen in the nonprofit world? They may not have the resources to employ such individuals to do that, but to your knowledge, does that go on?
Absolutely, yeah. The Headway did a really good campaign on union busting with their employees. And you know, we only lost that election by just a few votes, which really sucks. But they did. We hear it all the time. I mean, I saw union busting tactics just in our contract that we've had we've been a union shop at Health Partners for like 40 some years, probably more than that, actually. And there was union busting language that they were trying to put into our contract that we had to strike down. It is nonstop in nonprofit work. And Health Partners is technically a nonprofit, even though it's more of a corporation than it is a nonprofit. But in the eyes of the government, we're a 501c. So they really did narrow in on these workers to try to get them to sacrifice themselves for the organization, and they continue to do that constantly. They do it even in our shops that have had members in there for many years, and it's just what they do because they don't want somebody coming in and telling them to treat their workers the way they should be treated.
Well, what's the game plan here, Kelsey, for 2022? When it comes to organizing, and you know, I mean, there's a lot of organizing going on. There's a lot of angst among workers in all fields, in America. I'm just wondering, with your successes for this year going into next year, you got to have some kind of a plan in order, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I should probably defer that to our organizers. But from my understanding is that OPIU International has been partnering with us by getting apprentice organizers in to our local. And an apprentice organizer is somebody who has maybe some understanding about organizing or maybe even none at all. And what we do is we take them in and we train them and we teach them how to organize. And they get out there and they start organizing people. And we've been able to get some big wins from these apprentice organizers. These apprentice organizers are badass. They know what they're doing, and they're getting out there and they know how to talk to people and they know how to move people. And the International is partnering with us with getting more people in here to organize more people and to find new leads. And my understanding is that we have some new leads that are coming up with some other nonprofits and some other schools, but those aren't public yet. We have to wait. There's still some more gaming to do on their end and planning and stuff like that. But it's really just more about the reach out and getting more organizers involved and getting them, teaching them the basics of how to organize a site or a shop. And as well as what we also need to do too, and this is the thing that I've learned just in my area, my work area, is that not only external organizing is important, but so is internal organizing, because it's so easy to become content. And all it takes is just one bad contract proposal to move people, and we need to get ahead of that game and start continuing to move people and continuing to get people involved and continuing to organizing both internally and externally with all of our sites and future sites as well. And we're going to continue to be more aggressive with that as well in the upcoming years.
It's interesting what you just said, because, you know, one bad contract could motivate people. One good contract could motivate them, too, saying, well, wait a minute, you know, so-and-so is getting a pretty good deal over there. I want that kind of deal. So it kind of works both ways. It's interesting.
It sure does.
Really interesting. You know, you are fortunate, Kelsey, that you live in the Minnesota area, because you're not a right-to-work state. It seems like you have a kind of a union-friendly legislature compared to other states. Am I right in
saying
that?
Yeah, there is an advantage to not being a right-to-work. So these nonprofits are easier to organize as opposed to, like, the public sector, because we do have some schools in our unit as well. So the And what these people are, like, the clerical workers and the paras is who we represent at some of our schools. And because they're considered public workers, they're right to work. So we have to also step up our game with those people as well to make sure that the benefits that they have is because of the union. It's not because the government is generous and giving them what they need. Internal organizing still needs to be aggressive with our public sector as well, because the Janus decision really did us in on that.
Oh yeah. Well, the Supreme Court, the makeup of the Supreme Court is clearly not union friendly. But with that being said, we've got the Protect the Right to Organize Act, and hopefully we can gain some ground on that in the new year. We'll see what happens. Kelsey, you're great. Thank you so much for joining us here on America's Workforce. We covered a lot of ground here. Is there anything that I'm missing? Any takeaway here you want to leave to our listeners?
Well, one of our other sites is the Augsburg College, and we won the election with them as well. And they're currently working on their contract. However, there are some struggles with that contract right now, where they're fighting the union's proposals right now to make it a better institution. Augsburg also opposes the seniority layoff, and they're not paying the bargaining team to bargain, which has made the process incredibly long. So we're hoping that eventually, you know, we can try to get Augsburg to kind of start seeing things our way, and we can get a good contract for those people, because those are plenty of good, wonderful people that are there to provide a service to our college students and make sure that they are having the best possible experience with their education. I'd like to see Augsburg start to step up and start to have a little bit of common sense at that table for those members too.
Common sense is a good thing. Well, you keep us posted on that. Now, I mean, that's what this show is all about. If there's something happening in your respective community, Let us know about it. You know how to reach us here. We're on six different platforms, podcasts. We've got more and more listeners joining us every day, and it's all about solidarity. And when people hear what's going on in one area, they gang up and say, hey, let's fix this. Let's do it right. Let's throw some common sense into the situation and make their lives better. That's what unions are all about. Kelsey, thank you so much for joining us. Kelsey Anderson, Vice President of the Office of Professional Employees International Union, Local 12, out of Minnesota, Roseville, Minnesota. You stay safe, and let's have another chat in the new year, okay? How's that sound?
All right. Thank you. You have a great day now.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Greg Rivard, president of the Insulators Union, will be joining us back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Gregory Rivard. He is General President of the Insulators Union, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Insulators.org is a website. International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers is the appropriate title. Hey, Greg, welcome back to the show, and Happy New Year to you.
Well, thanks, Flash, for having me back, and Happy New Year to you and your crew as well.
And thank you for serving our country. I know you're a military veteran. In fact, we had Greg on the show to salute all vets on our Veterans Day broadcast, along with Will Adig. And Will did a stint with the Helmets to Hard Hats. We've talked a lot about so many people that served our country, that got involved in the trades, and the insulators have done a really good job with that. You know, I know you want to talk about your relief fund, because a lot of parts of this country, especially the Midwest, in fact, we had Bill Londrigan on the show the other day from Kentucky talking about the devastation in that area and how many lives lost, and needlessly, too, because there were people in their respective jobs that were told not to leave, keep on working in the middle of a tornado. Let's talk about COVID with the pandemic. Last time you and I talked, it was devastating. Just if you can recap the year for me, Greg, and what do you see going into 2022?
Well, the year has been a very difficult year, not only for our international union, but for our members as well, who try to go to work every day and earn a living and support their families. And obviously with the impact of COVID, it made it very difficult for them. And I'm sorry to report that we have lost over 40 of our members to the COVID during this past year. So it's been a very difficult year. And the main concern of our international union and our general executive board is for our members to go to work every day and come home safely to their families. So with the year 2022 coming, that continues to be our concern. There's an uptick. You see the news daily that the new variant is on the rise. And so we are doing whatever we can to help our members work safely and get home to their families safely every night.
Greg, talk to me about this relief fund. Like I mentioned, we had some violent weather here, and it, especially now you hear so much about climate change. And when we have climate change, you have that violent weather, whether it comes in the form of a tornado or a fire, crazy winds, water levels increasing, decreasing. I mean, all kind of wacky things are going on. But apparently, your union has done a pretty good job of outreach here. Talk to me about that.
Well, we do. We have a disaster relief fund that was started in 2005. At the time, it was Emeritus James Grogan, who was our general president, and the executive board at that time made a motion to start an assessment to each one of our juryman members of $100, and that was an installment of $250 twice, and for the apprentices, $50 to establish the relief fund. Because at that time, we had Hurricane Katrina that had hit New Orleans and had devastated New Orleans, and our membership there, too, lost their homes, everything they owned. And we, at that time, decided we've got to do something to help our members out when these disasters hit. So that's how that was established in 2005. And then at the convention in 2007, the delegates felt that it was time to permanently fund it by a check off under overly dues. And it continued that way until the 2017 convention, where the membership added to that. And so that relief fund, that is what gives us the basis to help our members out when a natural disaster hits and they're displaced from their homes.
So how much money do you have in that fund right now, Greg?
Well, right now we have $3.2 million, and that's based on 1 cent an hour working assessment by the membership. And that money is obviously trusted by the officers, the international officers. And as these events continue to unfold, the number one priority for our offices and the staff all knows, when a member has been displaced due to a natural disaster, everything stops until that check is cut. We get relief to that member and his family so they can continue to live and feed their family and get temporary housing. So we're very proud of how the fund has operated, and it's continued to service our members very well. As of today, since the inception of the fund, we've helped out over 1,000 members at any given time throughout that time period. And we've given out over $1.2 million in relief to our membership.
That's fantastic. And it all started, I'm looking back in 2005 with Katrina. That was a big one. That was a huge one in New Orleans. So this year I'm reading, well, in August we had the floods in Tennessee. September had Hurricane Ida, which devastated New Orleans again, not as bad as Katrina. And then the tornadoes in Kentucky just about three and a half weeks ago. Now, the most recent ones, did they get any money from that? Like, for instance, what happened this month, the Kentucky ones?
I'm sad to report that although we did get relief out there, we did have a family member that lost one of their family members to the tornado. But we had 12 members that were completely affected by the tornado, where they lost everything. We've got checks out to them immediately. We also, this past year here, we had the flooding in Tennessee, where one of our members that was trying to assist an elderly woman, he drowned during the time he was trying to assist. And we had many members that were displaced, and we helped them as well. So that member of ours was really a hero in our eyes. And we're grateful that we have the ability to help our membership out during these difficult times.
Well, you're planning in advance. I mean, to think about that, this comes out of workers' paychecks, and you're building something that you don't know where what the future holds for people, but we know that there's going to be more disasters. That's the thing. Greg, let me ask you, did you get any media attention on this? This is phenomenal what you're doing there at the Insulators. Has anybody picked up on this story?
No, we haven't advertised it. We just try to take care of our membership. And I'll give you a good example, because it's not just here in the United States we talk about, but in 2016, up in Alberta, at Fort McMurray, we have our members up there, Local 110. There was a massive wildfire. Matter of fact, it was one of the largest natural disasters in the history of Canada, and we had over 170 members who had to evacuate immediately with just the clothes on their back. As a fire came through town, the members were in the vehicles, and they had to drive off. And the fire consumed great portions of Fort McMurray. So we had 170 members that were immediately displaced. Nutley lost everything, most of them. And the next day, we had our international vice president at the Union Hall, and we are dispersing checks. So those individuals had a place to stay, and they had food for themselves and for their families until relief came from their insurance companies. So it's been a blessing to have this fund. And I commend the delegates at the convention for funding it. It's, you know, you never think it's going to happen to you, but sooner or later, someone you know or a family or friend, it happens. And it's nice to know that there is relief there.
And when it happens, you're ready to go. That's amazing. You got that all built in. Good stuff there. Good stuff. All right. Just a couple minutes left here, Greg. As I indicated at the start of the segment, it's been a kind of a crazy year. We got a new president. We got a union-friendly labor board. We still have a crazy political divide. We got this variant here that's just accelerating and shutting down some businesses. But on the bright side, more and more people are organizing. How's the business outlook for the Insulators? Let's start there, because obviously you want to keep your members working, right?
Well, we want to keep our members working, and although we've had to have to deal with this COVID and other distractions, you know, like this natural disasters, but we have to continue to man our work, and we have to recruit new members and man those jobs so that our employers can stay in business and continue to capture work for our members down the road. So it's been a busy year. Recruiting and trying to run apprenticeship schools, dealing with all the safeguards in place. But we're doing the best that we can, and so far I think that we've been successful.
And with the infrastructure bill in place, signed into law by the president recently, that's going to open up a lot of opportunities. You think you're ready for that? Are the apprenticeship programs cranking out enough people to handle all those jobs?
Well, that continues to be an issue, not only with the Insulators, but other trade unions, getting qualified people to come into the apprenticeship program to fill the need for the rank and file. And we have a lot of older members that have worked and are getting close to retirement age. And so it's not just recruiting people for this new work, but it's also to replace the people who've spent their lifetime working and now they're getting ready to retire. So it's going to be a challenge, but I'm very confident our director for our apprenticeship training, John Stahl, is out of Local 14, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he's doing a great job with our department, and he continues to work with all the local unions and the steering committees to ensure that we have qualified people come out to these job sites who are properly trained.
I love it. Well, I'm going to wrap it up on that note. Greg Rivard, General President of the Insulators Union, insulators.org. One more thing. I got to commend you on your website on the fact that we hear so much about going green. Oh, you got to use green materials because you want to recycle stuff. Well, the Insulators have been going green for 100 years. When you think about what you do, you're all about conservation, mechanical insulation. You want to save energy. And the Insulator's been around since, my God, 1903. So you've been green a whole long time there, Greg. So my hat's off to you and all the Insulators listening here on America's Workforce.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you having us on.
And once again, Happy New Year to you, your staff, and we look forward to talking together in 2022. Greg Rivard on our live line. And that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, we have the United Association and another segment with the Office of Professional Employees. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.